Welcome to the Queensland Seafood Industry Association podcast series. My name is Eric Perez. I'm the CEO of the association. I welcome you back to the second in a series of discussions around the trawl fishery in Queensland and issues that we're seeing with this so-called reform process. So I'm lucky to be able to speak to two gentlemen that represent another industry association that has connections with us as in QSIA, but have also an ongoing interest in what the reform is doing in Queensland. So by way of introduction, I have both the president and vice president of the Tweedheads Coolangatta Professional Fishermen's Association. Can I welcome in order as president, Kev Solway, and the organization's vice president, Mark Smythe, to the podcast. How are you, gentlemen?
Good day, Eric. How are you going? Mark Smythe. Very well, Eric. Thank you. Kev Solway, how are you going?
I'm good, mate. So let's get to the start of this. So we have the reform process going at the moment, and I'd like to get first, I'll ask you this to start with, Kev, if I could. Where do you think we are 5 years into the fisheries reform process from a trawl fisher perspective?
I think we're in a situation where the viability of the industry, because of bureaucratic bungling, has never been so bad.
So, Kev, do you think there's been a difference between the current reforms and reforms that you saw in the 80s?
The early reforms mainly looked at input restrictions and input measures to fix the issues. Now we've gone 180 where they don't seem to want to know anything about input measures. They just want to know about output measures. So we've gone from very simple fix-its to very complicated fix-its.
Yeah, I see. Mark, what's your perspective?
I basically think being taken over the top with the fact there that the sort of greens, as you want to call them, say that, you know, all the and Grumper and all the rest of it have got too much clout that's used in unrealistic data and figures against us. There was 2,000 of us, I think, when they started this in 2000, roughly. And I'm a little bit lucky because one of the boats, I've got two like Kev down here, and one of them's dual endorsed. So like the New South Wales is a pretty good fishery, and it's not as regulated, like, you know, as in the sense of the byproduct can be the actual wages and the fuel. Yeah, you know, they say we're supposed to be environmentally sustainable, which, you know, we've met all criteria with that. And yet they keep choking us, and it's just not working because we've got to throw half it back. There's a saleable market. Like, everything at the moment is sellable. So, you know, it's there's got to be a two-way street.
You know, I mean, the discard, the amount of waste and discard that has been forced upon us by Queensland Fisheries is absolutely outrageous.
Considering it's saleable, you know, so our unviability is brought upon by it, whereas it didn't have to be that way.
That level of disregard for what it is that you do in trawling and the ability to keep bycatch or incidental catch, which is not by its very nature, it's not something that you're targeting, that kind of restriction is no good. And that hasn't changed under this reform, as far as I understand, that the bycatch regulations are still in and any bycatch after a certain level has to be discarded, yes?
That's correct. And they have got no intention of changing that, none whatsoever.
I think
you'd find it would go the other way. They'd restrict us from catching more.
The scallops.
Not catching, but restrict us from landing more. We can catch it. We've just got to throw it away. But then they brought in the trawl whiting endorsement. And when they brought in the trawl whiting endorsement, none of that trawl whiting was supposed to occur below Cape Morton. But yet they still banned the local trawlers from landing the whiting, which the local trawlers had been landing the whiting for years, but since they started at Southport, because they used to sell it to SeaWorld to feed the animals. SeaWorld used to buy tons of it. There was a market there right from when SeaWorld first was developed at Southport. So the fisheries just came along and said, no, you're not allowed to keep that stream of income. It's got to get thrown back over the side. With all the BRDs and what have you in our gear, the idea of actually targeting byproduct is probably is not going to be financially viable proposition anyway. But the bycatch on top of what we're targeting just helps to cover the costs.
Look, we could go down the rabbit hole here of questionable decisions by fisheries management. But to get back to where we're at with the reform process now, in technical terms, we're 5 years into the process, but the new regulations and rules around how the fisheries are managed really haven't hit 1 year yet. So I think it's September this year, which we'll see 12 months of the new rules. And so one of the ones that sticks out and is quite prominent, at least from an industry point of view, and is something the listeners might want to get your perspectives on, is we've zoned the Queensland coast now. So there's five zones, starting at zone one up in the north, down to the south. And I'll put a map in the podcast description so people can see how the zoning's been put together. How has that impacted both of you? So I might start with Mark. Does the zoning mean much to you? Has that restricted your movement, or is it business as usual in that sense in terms of being able to move between zones for you?
No, because I got no units for northern. I'm stuck here in the southern sectors, the southern offshore. So, and we've already got a text from fisheries, I think, last week there, that we're 55% into the effort cap. So I got two 50-foot wooden boats, and down here it's very weather affected. We've got there's both us and Southport that have a big tourism and market, and you just can't get out and you can't keep the public supplied. So, yes, you know, as far as reform, no, I can't go up and leave and get to sheltered waters like the northern boats to do the nights. I would be, at this stage, devastated if I come to Christmas in the both boats, because one's dual endorsed and the other one isn't, just Queensland, and then they tell me coming up to Christmas in November or the 1st of November in the opening. No, when's it shut? September, isn't it?
That
I cannot work up there because of the effort cap's been managed.
Question a little bit for you, Kev. From your perspective, Kev, do you believe zoning has restricted you, or is it something that you're indifferent to? Because I get the sense from talking to trawl operators that this is coming off discussions over a long period now, that the majority of commercial operators would have preferred not to have the zoning. There are some that are for it, and that you'll get that in any kind of reform process. But from your perspective as an operator, what has zoning meant for you?
Yeah, no, it's meant we've had to choose, you know, what zone we want to fish in, and we've had to make these choices not knowing what the future management of the zones was going to be, i.e. southern inshore with the scallop. We're seeing micro zones within the zones for species management. We've also, you know, I mean, we've got this other thing that's happened with the scallops where, you know, because of the marine heat wave in the southern inshore, the scallops were classed as endangered and had to be shut down. But the scallops in the southern offshore were still viable, but the fisheries decided that they'd shut the scallops in the southern offshore because it made it easier to police. So what's the use of having zones to protect different species when they're going to just shut the species down in a zone where it's viable just for the case, and come up with the case of, oh, it's just about policing? I mean, you know, I was at the meeting where we were told you've got two choices. You either take zones or you take conversion factors. So we saw zones as a lesser of two evils, but we've still got conversion factors on the table. So, you know, it's another case of the fisheries lying to us. It's a blatant lie.
I guess it's a matter of, and it sounds a little bit, you can correct me here if I've got this incorrect, but it sounds like management on the run, as in they're testing things and you guys are the guinea pigs to test what works and what doesn't work. And one question that I have as someone outside looking in, despite the fact that my allegiance and my heart is in behind industry, obviously, is could they have achieved better management outcomes without zoning?
Oh, definitely. The idea that you need zoning to manage species is just absolutely ludicrous. And I think that's proved by what we're seeing, as I say, where you have the micro zones within the zones, the biomass goes across different zones. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's just, they said that the most vulnerable zone to over-exploitation was going to be the southern offshore. And when they were talking about where people should, or where late devil was going to go, they were going to push, 43% of the late effort back into the southern offshore. So It's not about the viability of the biomass. It's more about them restricting our ability to fish where we want.
Part of the reform process, the lie, and I'll call it a lie, that was pushed by government that our fisheries were in danger of collapse and they needed to come in to do something different. They had to come in to fix things so that we wouldn't go over the cliff's edge, I think was just bullshit. It didn't need to happen. And sorry, that's probably the best technical word I can come up with. The other sense that I get from an industry perspective is that I don't believe anyone was against having a considered conversation about what reform meant. And we've run that line because it's not just a line, it's what my board happens to think, that the discussions were there to be had, yet the way that this was rolled out, I'm talking the reform process in general, left a lot to be desired. And I think much like every other fishery in Queensland, so I'm talking line, crab and net, and of course trawl, that you've all been hit in different ways, but the common factor is that there's been implementation of fisheries management interventions that didn't need to happen the way that they happened, because there could have been other ways of reaching the same endpoint. And what I'm seeing with the zoning, and maybe you can comment on this, because it's something that I think was one of those unintended consequences of them zoning, is the degree of competition between boats has increased, the degree of potential pulse fishing has increased, and the degree of pressure potentially down the track in different elements of the fishery will grow as a result of them zoning the coast. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, no, for sure. You're 100% correct. But I mean, to add further to that, the whole let's talk this harvest strategy, where the whole harvest strategy is based on lies, and the one factual thing that they can look at for their effort in the harvest strategy, which is our logbooks, well, they corrupted them, as in, just a couple of the scenarios quickly are: if you're school prawning in the southern offshore, that's classed as king prawning. If you're bugging in the southern inshore, that's classed as scalloping. So even when they've got the figures, they manipulate the figures to suit their agenda.
Yeah, we could go down the track of misuse of our data quite a lot. And I guess the point of some of this is, and I've heard this said a little bit, that the degree of trust from industry, from you guys towards government, is almost completely now eroded. And part of that is the ongoing use of information against industry without any justification other than making it easier for the department to manage the resource or to hit sustainability target that was never discussed, was never tested, and is to appease conservation groups. So much so, my first discussion in this new series was with a trawl operator who mentioned the 60% biomass target. Now, we understand that 20 to 40% in the Commonwealth fisheries is considered conservative, pushing 40% biomass, but they're pushing us out to 60. So I might have more time for that argument if the trawl fishing fleet was getting bigger. We've reduced from over 1,900, 2,000 boats 20-odd years ago to what, maybe 300 plus that are not all actively working all the time. So where is this mythical pressure going to come from that is going to collapse the fisheries?
Over my 43 years or 47 years or whatever this is, I've been fishing, it's been a cycle of feast and famine all the way through, where I can say I've gone from in about 2012 or 2013, I had my worst year of my whole fishing career. It was actually costing me $5,000 a month to go to work, and that wasn't because of fuel prices, that was because of catches. In 2015, I had the best year of my fishing career. Now, under a harvest strategy, that wouldn't be allowed to happen. Because 2013 was a bad year, under the harvest strategy, we would be restricted in our fishing ability. So the figures definitely aren't black and white. It's the same as their unfished number. How can they have one number for the unfished biomass when we know that through drought and wet seasons, the biomass changes dramatically? That's not black and white.
It doesn't seem to have been factored into how they're setting their harvest strategies, and that's a whole nother topic area, and it's something we can come back to in another discussion around how do you develop harvest strategies. I don't think I've had a conversation with a fisherman in any fishery that believes the harvest strategies are going to be of any use, and it's not because there's no will on our side to try and get them to work. It's trying to get them to make sense, given that commercial fishing is a seasonal occupation. You are in a lot of ways dictated to what you can do by the weather, and it's a very seasonal thing. And I don't think I'm talking out of school when I'm saying I don't think those things were considered, because there are other drivers that are pushing fisheries management to do what they're doing versus any need to look at the impacts on commercial fishers. So this is to both of you, Kev and Mark. Can you give me a sense, now that we're halfway into the process of reform, we're a year into the new changes, if you had a message to send to Fisheries Queensland and or the minister about what you might see done different from your perspectives, what would that look like? So I might start with you, Mark, if I could.
Eric, this has actually been quite an interesting conversation that I've been too busy, as I said, to get to involve with the two boats and the reform and that, and I've been a bit lucky that when there's drama. But back in 99 and 2000, when actually I think the SIA was the QCFO, and I was heavily involved in the politics side of things in the first flyback in 2000. Now, you've opened the eyes up that the agenda was just, we were working, we were busy, we were trying to make a quid, we were supporting families, I think we were paying 18% interest rate or something. They turned around and some fish retired, money were driving the same issues here. Then Grumper and WWF got onto it, and we got sort of choked out of it. It was the start of the end. They just had this fixation that, no, and yes, you know, get rid of 2,000 trawlers here. We don't want to see you. And now we're down to 300. So it's a big coastline for 300 boats. But one thing that come out of it back then was, when we never had the numbers, and we were easy to pluck off because, you know, we were trying to live. It was that simple. And we were catching, there was, when you said that what the industry's in, what the state of collapse, that astounded me. But the Queensland Boat and Fisheries Patrol, we said, well, how about, you've got our logbooks, you're using it against us, which in back in the 80s when we started logbooks, you'd never do it against us, but that happened. So that aside, and then they turned around and, right, this and this. So, well, how about yous got our records there? Yous are doing this. How about yous tell us now how much yous amateurs are taking? And then they did it for 3 years. They put boating and fishery patrols on every boat ramp. Eric, you know what happened? They got a shock. They shit themselves and closed the book. And guess what happened? You go back in the archives and it just, you know, they got the time, they got the money, and they got the members. They're plucking off. You know, how much time? I quit in 2000 because I said the politics of trying to stay fishing, to stay ahead of being able to sort of be viable, politics overtook me life. I couldn't get to work because, you know, and I just give it away. I said, no, I've got to concentrate and work. I've got to get, you know, I've got to work the boat. And by the sounds of it, nothing's changed. They've got a bigger group, a bigger pool of people, more powerful people, because, you know, I'm sitting here and got my TV station here on the boat with SBS, and all you see is save the koala, save the, save, 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 and $15 a month. And they got an endless pool of money just to keep creating havoc, you know, and where do they want it to end? What do they want, 30 boats? Like, how do they feed the public? Like, it just doesn't make, like surely 300 boats over the whole East Coast Australia, Queensland, I'm starting to get, it's been a bit of an eye-opener that I just...
After what we've been through and the ups and downs that this industry's seen, to come along and say that this reform has to go through in the name of sustainability is just another blatant lie. The whole thing's a lie. It's based on lies. The unfished biomass is a lie. The way they count fish in the ocean is a lie. Their maximum economical yield is a lie. Their maximum sustainable yield is a lie. Their data as to the effort put into the species is a lie. So I went to the first Southern Inshore workshop, and I went to the first Southern Offshore workshop, and I never went back. I had to resign because I just couldn't sit there and listen to that rubbish, the passive-aggressive attitude towards us and the rubbish that they were trying to throw at us. It was just, mate, for someone who's been in the game as long as me, to listen to those young bucks, fresh out of the WWF or the university, telling me what's been going on and getting it so wrong was just an absolute insult.
Yeah, they seem to put everything down to a graph and manipulate the whole...
Lots of graphs. Lots. Pretty. Pretty pictures.
Yeah, and it's all manipulated to suit themselves. Even just the fines now. We don't get fined money. We get fined units or points or something. Let's get back to reality and just start earning it. Just everybody living and doing what we do and then feeding the public for the public that can't go out there and catch a fee.
That's a big part of the issue here, but I'll make sure that when we publish this discussion and the previous one and more that are yet to come, that politicians in the community get a sense of the discussion here, because at the end of the day, you're not going out to fish for reason to deplete the resource so we don't have a fishery left. I think that argument is a stupid one, and that's the conservation one, that we're out there pillaging the ocean, allowing commercial fishers to do what they do best, to feed families, as you discussed, because most of us are running small businesses, not large enterprises, and that we're giving access to seafood to people who otherwise can't get to that seafood. And I don't think anyone is making the argument that we can't have rules around what we do, because it's, you know, it can't be the Wild West going into the future, nor was it before the reform came. It's more about having a considered conversation with Fisheries Queensland. And I think just in this feedback now and from what I've seen the last 5 years is, for lots of different reasons, they don't want to have that conversation in a way that may benefit us. So you would think in reform and in consultation, you try and get a win-win for the people that are involved. And unfortunately, what I tend to see and what fishermen tend to tell me is it's a win-loss, and the people that lose are typically the commercial fisher, not the department. And the other loser that is in this equation that doesn't get much say in any of this is the community. So for the elderly, for those that can't or won't go fishing to get access to seafood, this idea about having a right to access local caught seafood is quite a critical one. And we can't get there and sustain that if we don't have management that allows you to keep doing what you're doing within reason. So I don't think you're arguing, nor have I heard any fair-minded commercial fisher, whether they're a member of us, of the association or not, that want to go out there and destroy the resource. It's kind of stupid. If Fisheries Queensland or the ministers listening to this, if Kev, you're saying you've been in the game for 40 years, if you've been able to fish for that length of time, then the resource is renewable and it's not being depleted to the degree that the farcical nature of that reform package that came out that said, well, we're on the precipice of our fisheries going to poo. It was never the case. It could have been discussed in a public way in a very different way, and they didn't choose to do that. So, look, things can change if we keep putting pressure on, and it's helpful that we get associations like yourselves and becoming members of us or becoming member of any state, Queensland state group, to take the fight to the politicians and to let them know what's going on. So, look, I appreciate your time. I've been speaking to Kev Solway and Mark Smythe today on this podcast around trawl fishing issues. Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Just one more thing before we go, Eric. Both Mark and I have got our children, our sons on the boats. We want to pass this business on to our family. So why would we want to destroy what we're trying to pass on to our family?
Yeah, could not agree more. Thank you, gents. For those listening, this has been the QSIA podcast series. A lot more to come on the trawl issue and other issues related to this fisheries reform process. Thank you again, and we'll catch everyone on the next podcast.